eats couch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Ewan Miller, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies.
Ooh, yes. That's right. Yeah.
Yay.
Either you're really excited or you're stretching when you said that.
I actually was stretching. This week we got a good show for you. We're going to incur some furry vengeance upon our show, and I'm sure afterwards we're going to get some weird furry vengeance as well.
I don't even know what you're saying at this point.
We're also going to have a nightmare of sorts. We're moving to Elm Street. We're going to talk about how if I lived on Elm Street, I would be the first one to die. Because that, I believe, is a scientific fact.
Why? Because you sleep so much?
Yes.
Really?
And randomly. Like, there is no... you know...
Your life is a micro
planning sleep
saying.
For me. It's whenever my body wants to go, it's time to go.
Word.
So yeah, I'd definitely be the first one to die if I lived on Elm Street. Anyway, okay. but before we get to that whole story, here's how you can get a hold of us: fatguysatthemovies.com. You can get on iTunes and search Fat Guys at the Movies, and
yes,
pop
you
right
can.
Up. You can download us, subscribe to us, review us. We always like those reviews. I'm gonna check those here later in the show. Can email
not
us.
Not that we're prepared or anything.
You can email us, fatguysatfilmschoolrejects.com. You can leave us a voicemail, area code 614-388-8735.
The suspense was killing me there for a while.
We have one of those to share later in the show. We're going to talk about that. It's actually a really good question.
Yes.
And you can get us on Facebook. Just go to facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And you can do something with the Twitter, if you'd like. Go to twitter.com/rejects, and you'll find ramblings from yours truly, or twitter.com/KevinCarr with two R's if
for
you'd
the
like
awesome
to
stuff.
See what Kevin Carr is watching on his brand new high-definition television.
Yeah, and you can also go to formspring.me and ask me questions. You can find that on the Twitter. I've gotten some very interesting
questions.
I've gotten some very interesting questions.
Interesting.
Somebody gave me a story problem, and I nailed it.
Fascinating.
Isn't that amazing?
Someone gave you like a math problem?
Yeah, like literally a train's leaving, traveling west at 75 miles an hour, and it's 10 miles from Kansas City, and train's traveling east. 60 miles an hour, 12 miles from the destination, who gets there first? And I'm like, the one going 75, because it has less. I knew it exactly. I just think that, I'm like, you tried to stump me with this story. But then they asked me something about dogs, and I'm like, that's just too much work.
You didn't want to show off your knowledge of dogs?
Well, no, I mean, that's when I actually had to figure out. I may actually figure it out, since that's the way I am. Somebody also asked me what the answer was, and I said 42.
Nice. That is actually the answer.
It is the answer. Then they asked me the question.
I don't want to spoil Lost or anything, but that's pretty much what happens.
Yeah.
It's just 42.
Yeah. Well, and then they asked me the answer, and I said, well, the mice are still calculating that after 10 billion years, and hopefully the Vogons don't destroy us before we get the question. Little nod to my sci-fi geek friends.
Oh, well, you know.
That's it. That's all I was saying. I completely.
That's exactly what you know.
We're just trying to avoid talking about furry vengeance. I think that has a lot to do with this segment.
Well, it's, you know, it's an unprecedented week where we've both seen both movies. I
know. Why? What's going on? What is this sudden newfound desire to actually be responsible, Neil Miller?
Well, I think it's more of a convenience thing. The Furry Vengeance screening was on a Sunday in the middle of the afternoon at a theater within walking distance of my house.
So there's no excuse.
So there was, like, no excuse for me to miss it. Like, babies, I'll be honest with you, babies next week, it's a theater, like, way up north, like, really early on a Friday.
Like in Dallas.
It is not convenient at all for me to get to, so it is likely that if something else comes up, which something else usually comes up in my world, then I will probably miss it. But I've already seen Iron Man 2, so we're in good shape.
But I know you, and when you say something comes up, a lot of times that means that the pizza's delivered.
Dude, don't spoil the secrets, okay? I think it's very important for me to have people think that I'm busy all the time.
Sure.
I run a website. It's kind of busy sometimes.
Whatever. Is the drinking game up? I sent you a drinking game this week. I don't think it was up yet. Boom.
See, these are things that come up. Now I'm going to have to do that.
Now you have to do the drinking game
in the morning, and now I'm
going
to have to miss babies. So that's just too bad.
Anywho, so Furry Vengeance. Let's get to this stellar epic movie that is Furry Vengeance. Forest creatures enact revenge on Brendan Fraser for getting fat and for cutting down their homes.
Do you know why they call me the King of Green? Because I love this planet.
So you're going to take out the whole forest?
Yeah.
But we're replacing it with a shopping mall with a forest theme.
This is an opportunity to do something good for our family and for the environment.
How is ripping out the forest good for the environment?
Riley Cyrus!
I want to hear your thoughts.
Well, honestly, I feel like I've watched this movie twice already because not only did I see it, but I sat in front of a lady who repeated everything that happened in the movie. Loud during the film.
Oh, I've got a great story about people in my screening, but you go ahead.
But so I feel like I've seen it twice, and it wasn't good either time.
the echo version of the movie wasn't as good.
Yeah, it's a very contrived film, and it uses some really, I don't know, shallow humor. I feel like if you have the intelligence of a 6-year-old, this might be funny. But it really doesn't offer the world anything more. I mean, it has, what, 5 jokes that involve a skunk.
Basically, it
spraying.
It's got a lot of skunk farts and
a lot of skunk spray.
Brandon
jokes
Fraser being
and,
racked in the privates.
You know, I'll be honest. That was funny the first time, but you know, I just don't feel like that brand of humor is intelligent, nor is it funny when it's put on repeat like that.
Yeah.
And I just think that it all feels very silly. Mm-hmm. And not in a smart way. There's nothing smart about it. That's the problem. There's nothing smart about it. There's nothing redeeming about it. It's just a dumb movie. And even when it has this like this message of like being green and being environmentally friendly, it doesn't even really do that very well. and I did learn something, though.
It is kind of thrown in as an afterthought. There are kind of like,
and that seems like the whole point
nice
of the movie. You know, the whole point of the movie is like, oh, you have to be nice to the critters. But I did learn that if Brooke Shields and Brendan Fraser ever had a child, it would look like Justin Bieber. So
was that really Justin Bieber?
No, but it was an unfortunate soul who looks just like him.
I am proud to say I have no idea who Justin Bieber is. I recently
found out who Justin Bieber is. Apparently he sings stuff.
You know what it'd be like if you're completely, if you don't follow politics at all, and you kind of wander into either the Democratic or Republican headquarters at election time, and you're like, who are these people you're talking about? And everyone seems to know who they are, and they're very passionate about
it. Who's Mitt Romney?
Yeah, who's this guy? What's that going on? That's how I am with Justin Bieber. I mean, people hate this guy on Twitter, and I'm just like...
Or love him.
That's true.
I know you love him secretly.
I don't even know who he is. He could literally come up and punch me in the face.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have no idea, because that happens all the time.
Mm.
People punch me in the face all the time. So anyways, I'll, when we get back from the break, I'll give my review. But
okay.
But so you say it totally rocks, is what you're saying.
Right? You know, it's not even worthy of being one of those dumb family films. It's so dumb that I feel like if you take your kids to this, they will come out dumber.
Okay.
And that's not really what you're supposed to be going for. You're supposed to be taking your kids to stuff that enriches their life. This one will make them get beat up at school.
Okay, so don't take them to this. It'll make them dumber.
All right. No. And we're back here on Fat Guys at the Movies. Now that you know that I think that Furry Vengeance will make you a dumber human being.
Yes.
It's interesting. I'm interested to know what Kevin thinks about it.
Well, I have a way to look at this. You're right. It is. I think the only way it's going to be successful in any realm, which it won't, but I think it has a minor success at kids like under 10. Because I took my 8-year-old and my 6-year-old, and they loved it. They thought it was great. And pretty much if you got farting skunks.
Oh, it's the best movie they've ever seen.
Yeah, it's awesome, you know. But here's the thing for me. I just... It's stupid. I mean, I don't know how else to say it. It's not even a funny way of doing it. It's sort of like a Dr. Doolittle direct-to-video, like Dr. Doolittle 6, Brendan Fraser takes it down. And they forgot to actually just go straight to DVD with this one, and they went and gave it a theatrical screening. I mean, the effects are terrible. There's literally a scene, and you know the scene I'm talking about, where he comes downstairs and the animals are dancing. I swear to God,
yeah.
I have seen better animation on Powerpuff Girls. That is,
yeah, it is very strange because it's a whole scene where you can tell that it's CGI.
Yeah,
like blatant CGI, and that's it makes the movie look really cheap.
Yeah, I mean, just the effects are awful, and it's very rough, and they don't. They really try and go for the slapstick. I mean, if you think that Brendan Fraser's done some real crap in your life, you're going to set a new bar for this. I won't go as far to say that this is like the most awful movie of the year, because on one hand, it is just made for kids. If this just came as some direct-to-DVD thing that like Fox or somebody put out in their like Fox Family line, I'd be like, whatever, it's okay, it's cute, the kids will like it, and parents aren't going to necessarily love it. It just seems really a bad idea to put this in theaters. It just doesn't seem like a movie that's going to go anywhere.
Yeah.
And it just sort of like they're like, oh, we got to put something out to contractually, you know, because we need to cover this weekend. But so I'm going to say it sucks. But even totally more sucks. So, what was really funny is Saturday morning free screenings, they bring out the creepiest, weirdest people. It's like waiting in line for funnel cakes at the state fair. You see some of the weirdest people. And literally, I swear to God, Monique's character from Precious showed up at the movie with like four kids in tow. It walks in late, like 5 minutes late, talking at the top of the lungs, yelling and screaming at the kids. You sit here, whatever. They're watching the movie. She's making her like 12-year-old son take her 2-year-old daughter out when she's causing problems. And then at one point, the 2-year-old just literally throws down on the ground and starts to pitch a fit. I mean, just screeching. Full 5 minutes before finally she gets up and takes her out.
Mm-hmm.
And what's so funny about that? The movie wasn't even worth me telling her to shut up. I was like, whatever. Should I watch the floor show or the movie? But I mean, if you got kids, I mean, seriously, bring your 6-year-old, your 7-year-old, they're going to like it. My kids did, but it's not like a Pixar movie where the adults will like it too.
Yeah.
So that's what I have to say about Furry Vengeance.
Yeah, no, it's awful.
Let's talk about the next movie.
The next movie is the movie, I guess, of the week. It's A Nightmare on Elm Street, in which Freddy Krueger rises again, this time in a rebooted form, in the rebooted form of Jackie Earle Haley, killing some teenagers in their dreams.
I had another nightmare last night. I can't tell what's real anymore. Is there anybody else out there that this is happening to?
Every time that I dream, there's always this man.
That's his mark, isn't it? Freddy.
Oh my God, you've seen him too. Wake up, wake up. Who are you?
Remember me.
Now, you are not a horror movie fan, yet you like...
I don't like scary movies at all.
You hate scary movies.
However, can I say this?
No.
Katie Cassidy, who plays Chris, she's one of the characters in the movie. Mm. She's kind of a focus of like the very first part of the movie.
Yeah. Well, at least...
I'm a big fan of her.
Yeah. You're a big fan of her walking around in panties, too, and...
Well, it's the jeans.
Oh, that's right.
For some reason, it was the jeans. Anyway, but no, I'm not a big fan of horror movies, as you know, but I tell you, this one
scared me. Have you seen the other Nightmare on Elm Street movies? I'm sorry I interrupted you, but have you seen
I've seen a few of them. I watched the original again this week, and it was funny because I watched them in reverse order. I watched the new one, and then I watched the old one. I hadn't seen the old one in years.
Yeah.
And what I learned is that it works both ways, because the old one is very slapsticky, and the old one really does use, you know, the concept behind the movie just to get you to Freddy Krueger and some of his like gags and jokes.
Did you see the original one? Because he's not gaggy and jokey in the first movie. He doesn't get really bad.
Well, he is kind of silly. I mean, the him walking down the street with like the 20-foot arms
thing.
That's
not meant to be campy. That's just a bad special effect. That's not like he's not walking around going.
Like he gets his face pulled off and stuff like elixir through the phone.
But that's not like, that's not campy like his like if you're talking
well,
like
right. No,
part
he gets
four
much worse.
And five where he's like
yeah, parts four and five and Freddy versus Jason territory. I mean, he gets much worse. Absolutely, I agree.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is the new one takes it in a very disturbing direction.
Okay.
In my mind, it definitely walks down a more disturbing path where Freddy really is kind of the personification of evil, and it focuses a little bit more on this town, you know, these five or however many kids who don't understand what's going on to them and are trying to figure that out. And I think I kind of like that. I kind of like that it was a little bit more serious. And I think if you're going to remake something, you should give it, you should at least bring one good new idea. And I thought that was the one good new idea, because they kind of play around with kind of the nature of Freddy.
See,
and whether he's
that I didn't
you know,
like, and the reason I didn't like it is because in the first movie, in the original movie, well, the first series, he just killed children. That was his thing. He killed children, and the parents of Elm Street took revenge and burned him to death. And in this one, they put a little bit more to his story, but they change him a bit. And I'm like, I just didn't see where they leaped from what his psychosis was to suddenly being the personification of evil in people's dreams. I'm like, that just, it didn't make that link, you know, because he killing children, then he kills them when he gets older. Whereas this one, let's just say he likes children a little bit more than he should.
Well, yeah, and you know what, they kind of play around with whether or not he, in the original movie, and I don't want to spoil anything, in the original movie, it's pretty clear that, like, Freddy was doing it. Like, he was the bad guy.
Yeah.
From the moment, and in this one, they kind of play around with whether or not he actually,
yeah, I mean,
did do bad things to children.
I think that's interesting, but I thought they tiptoed around a lot of that, a little too much. I mean, it's rated R. You can go down this path. You can say what you need to say.
Right. I will say though, when it finally gets to the last couple of people left alive, it gets in my mind very creepy.
Yeah. I mean, I thought and this is the thing. And I kind of thought this was what it was going to be. All the Freddy Krueger and dream stuff I was totally down for, except for a little bit. I thought his makeup made him look like an alien because he had
very interesting.
Alien. It looked a little goofy, but
yeah, when he talked, he wasn't as expressive
as
Robert Englund was.
Yeah, well, that's what you're going to get if you really were a burn victim. So I forgive that. But overall, I thought the Freddy scenes were really good. I thought the dream elements were really good. You put the kids in there, the teenagers, I suddenly lost all interest. I was just like, oh my gosh. Because they didn't have the same... There was something about the characters in the very first movie. Say what you want to about Heather Langenkamp and how dorky and cheesy as she was. There was a likability and an identification I had with her. Maybe it's because that was in the 80s and I was a teenager in the 80s and now I'm pushing 40. So I'm not a teenager anymore, even though I like to think I look like one. But
even though you have the sense of humor of one?
No, not even a teenager. 12-year-old. Tops. But the characters in this one just felt like they were more cut from the characters in the sequels, like part 4 and 5, where they're just like, let's just throw some fodder at the camera here. And I didn't like the real-world characters. The other thing I didn't like about them is, in the original movie... It's just these kids were having nightmares, and they're like, oh, I'm having these nightmares, I'm seeing this guy. And then suddenly the character of Tina gets killed, and they're like, oh my God. And then it gets this they didn't know if it was her boyfriend and all this kind of thing, that they kind of follow this story in the first one, in the new one. But it takes them a while for them to start getting sleep deprived. The problem is, in this movie, it starts with everybody sleep deprived. So there's nowhere to escalate it. And that's where I was like, eh. So, I mean, I thought it worked.
Well, and I think it's an interesting choice, because they really do. They jump right into it.
Yeah.
And I think I kind of like that, where they really do. They jump right into the, you know, the first character you see is already having nightmares about Freddy, and he's totally messed up.
Yeah.
And I thought that was kind of an interesting choice. I mean, overall, I liked it. I thought it's one of the better remakes that Platinum Nunes has put out.
I liked the Friday the 13th remake a lot better. I liked both of these better than Texas Chainsaw.
I hated Texas Chainsaw.
Yeah, I would have to say that if you're a big fan of the genre, you may want to see it. If you're a purist, you may have problems with it. But if you're just a teenage kid or a college kid wanting to go see a slasher movie, it's going to make a lot of money because of that.
Oh, totally. And we'll talk about that more. I want to carry this over to the next segment.
Okay, but my official grade kind of rocks, barely.
I agree. Kind of rocks.
2 miles of hard road, 33 years of tough luck, 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck.
Oh, yeah.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. We're going to continue talking a little bit about Nightmare on Elm Street.
There's just so much to say.
Because I think it warrants it. And, let's address some of these issues in a minute. Let's talk first about box office. Let's get that out of the way.
Yeah.
Just because I think the rest of the segment's going to be a lot about Nightmare, so...
Yeah. Well, last week we had How to Train Your Dragon coming in on top, as predicted, yes. $15.3 million. The backup plan...
Oceans did not win,
unfortunately. I was going to be that guy who was like, no, I predicted Oceans.
Well, Ocean was only in like 1,200 theaters.
I know. It was a miscalculation on my part. But How to Train Your Dragon, the backup plan finished second. Losers really did not do well.
Losers did not do well at all. I'm surprised at how poorly it did. And how relatively successful the backup plan was, because it, first of all, it's a terrible, terrible, terrible showing for $12 million for a major star.
Yeah,
sorry, it was a bad weekend.
If you want to consider her a major star,
yeah, but it's about twice what they were predicting.
Yeah,
and
the losers should have. I guess with all the marketing and stuff that Warner Brothers put into that, it should have made a lot more than $9 million.
I think it was harmed by the fact that Kick-Ass kind of came in. If it came out in a vacuum, I think it would have done a little bit better.
Yeah.
But it seems sort of like a sorry, sloppy seconds for Kick-Ass.
Yeah. Well,
which
speaking,
also didn't do great.
Well, it didn't do great last week. It made what eight or nine million. Yeah. Thinking about this, you know, speaking of Kick-Ass, sorry. Got to get back on track here. The movie that they paid $50 million for it, it was made for $30 million. It's made $66 million worldwide. So Kick-Ass,
it's going to be profitable.
As much of a failure as a lot of people might have thought. It might be profitable. Whether or not it's profitable enough to get a sequel out of it, it's hard to say. But
I wouldn't expect a theatrical sequel out of it.
But
unless it pulls like a Harold and Kumar and is so popular on DVD that it's
I have
like,
a feeling
well, let's
be
make
pretty...
a. That's the only way it could pull it out, is they'd be like, well, let's make a sequel, and we'll just go ahead and release it theatrically. We know we're going to make money on DVD, which is how Carol and Kumar movies... Those movies don't make any money theatrically, but they just go ahead and release them just so they can.
Right. So...
But here, this is the thing I think is interesting, is... And this is not to take anything away from How to Train Your Dragon, because it's a cute enough movie. I didn't think it's as great as everyone says it is. But it was cute, and it's decent to take your kids to. It's not that it's performing ridiculously well. It's performing exactly what you'd expect a movie like that to do. It's just everything around it is not performing well. Mm-hmm. You know, this week, and the reason it won, it wasn't because it's like Avatar, but it was $70 million for like 4 weekends in a row. It won the weekend with what, $15 million?
Mm-hmm.
$15 million. That's almost nothing. I mean, in terms of Hollywood box office, $15 million for the weekend, and then the new releases didn't even come close to that. So
yeah,
it's just I think everybody's saving up for this weekend.
I have a feeling Nightmare is going to clean up this weekend. Yeah. Furry Vengeance is dead in the water. I think
I will be surprised if Furry Vengeance. It's not even going to crack the top five. I can guarantee you that. I will be surprised if it's like even in the top 10.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting because, I mean, even Brendan Fraser, his last couple movies have not been strong. You know, Journey to the Center of the Earth was a pretty big family-friendly film opening, and it only made $21 million its opening weekend. So
yeah.
I mean, that was in the middle of summer. So.
It did okay. That's probably his most successful one. I mean, that and The Mummy 3.
Well, yeah. But I think The Mummy is more of a franchise and less about, you know, him.
Yeah, it's not him. It could be anybody.
Yeah.
But anyways, what do you think Nightmare's going to make, 50?
I think 50 is a pretty solid. I think people, if you look at the tradition, and I'm looking it up as we speak here, about Platinum Dunes and their releases, it's one of those things where they've done pretty well with all of their releases, because here's the thing that they do, is they really do make very commercially viable remakes. You know, you look at...
Well, not all of them are remakes. Like, they did The Unborn, but that was more about David Goyer.
Well, yeah, and that was kind of...
And The Hitcher did not do well.
The Hitcher did not do well, but I don't remember The Hitcher being that crazy popular.
The Hitcher was a video movie. When The Hitcher original one came out in the theaters, I don't think anybody saw it. I think it was all on video.
But, I mean, Friday the 13th made $40 million on its opening weekend. And I think Nightmare is a slightly more viable, because you have a more interesting central character. I know that's probably blasphemy to a lot of people, but I think Freddy Krueger is a more personable central character than Jason.
he's sweet.
So
he's just nice. He's a nice little boy. He just loves his mother.
So I think between 40 and 50. I'm going over 50.
I need to take the soundbite and send it to Robert Fury, because I think he'll come and punch you in the face.
What, did I like Freddy more than I like Jason?
Yeah, he loves. He's a big Jason fan.
Well, you know, you'll have that. But I mean, do you remember how did those first Nightmare on Elm Street movies do back in the '80s?
considering that New Line Cinema adopted its own name as the house that Freddy built, they did very well. They didn't do great. They were like they were good for like $30 million, but that was back in the '80s.
$25 million was the first one.
$25 to $30 million. That's what the, and then they got a little more popular, but they never cracked $100 million. They were all, you know, 30 to 50. You know, when you got to the sequels, and they were made for like $6 or $8 million. So these things were wildly profitable, and it's the same reason why the Saw movies continue to do well.
Right.
They make them for $10 million or less. That is why slashers have always done well. Same thing with the original Friday the 13th. Same thing with the Halloween. Slasher movies are cheap, they're easy, and the reason they work is because you don't need stars. I mean, you get Jackie Earle Haley as Freddy Krueger. That was just more for, because Robert Englund was so iconic. He's the only man, do you know, he's the only actor who's ever, well, up until now, played in every single incarnation of that, except for, I think, Lon Chaney playing the Wolfman back in the 40s. All the other, you know, like Kane Hodder, they had about 5 or 6 people playing Jason.
Right.
You know, different people playing Michael Myers and that sort of thing. But for these long extended series. But this is the thing. The star of this movie is Freddy Krueger. Nobody knows anybody else who's in it. I mean, you might say, like, oh, there's Clancy Brown. He was in Highlander. You know, but other than that, it's Freddy Krueger's the thing.
There's that hot girl.
Yeah, there's the girl who looks great in the short shorts, you know. So it is... It's made for the star of the film is the slasher, and what they are is they're bringing it to a new audience. I guarantee you, of all the people that are going to go see this movie, I would be surprised if half of them have even seen the original.
Yeah, and I think that seems to be the draw, or at least the success of Platinum Dunes, which they continue to be successful with these movies because they're updating them for a newer audience. You know, they're a little bit more hip. They are a little bit, you know, and they're glossier. Mm-hmm. And I think it really works for them. I think that the people who are going to enjoy Nightmare the most are people who do not have an investment in the original film. Like me. I have no investment in the original film. I saw it, you know, when I was young, and it scared the crap out of me, and I never wanted to see it again. Looking back at it, I think it's kind of cheesy, and it's not that good.
Oh, it's good. I mean, but see, that's me. I was in my teens when that movie came out. I remember watching it a couple times on video. I loved that movie. Mm-hmm. And so watching this one now, it's like, there are some things they did that I liked, some things I didn't like. But you had made the point that they're not making this movie for us. They're making it for the teenagers and the kids and the college students who haven't seen. I was sitting there, literally sitting there in the movie. What was really funny is when I was watching the screening, and we see it in the trailer, so it's not really a spoiler, there's the tub scene where she's lying in the tub and the hand comes out of the water.
Yeah.
And first of all, that's an iconic scene from the original original movie.
Yeah.
And it's in the trailers. I was shocked at how many people gasped when that happened. They're like, oh, and I'm like, I felt like standing up and going, what are you guys, idiots? This thing, I mean, you knew this was going to happen. Not only was it in the trailer, but it was in the original. But that's when I kind of realized, I'm like, you know what? A lot of these people, you know, these are looking at people who are like 20, 22, maybe even 16 watching this movie. I'm like, you've probably never even seen this.
Yeah. So. Exactly.
Hey, before we go on to talk about the Fat Guy 5, real quick, we do have a listener voicemail.
Oh, yeah. And this kind of relates to what we've been talking about.
Yeah, this comes from Thomas from Seattle. And, we'll just play it real quick.
Hi, Kevin. This is Thomas from Seattle again. I've been noticing a trend the last few years with movies that anytime a movie turns out to be kind of disappointing, that somehow it's the producers or the studio that always gets blamed. And, I mean, I know that studios can interfere and producers can interfere with the director and his vision or her vision. But I think that's letting off the directors from, you know, it's like we're letting them off the hook. It's always the director, it's always the producers or the studio's fault, and sometimes directors have bad days. So I just wish there was a little bit more of an acknowledgement that directors can have a bad project or a bad day at the office, and the movie just didn't turn out very well. Thanks, Kevin. Bye. Again, Thomas in Seattle. Bye.
So here you go. Who's the blame? Who's the blame for a bad movie? Notice how he puts it as blame. It's not like whose fault is it if it's good? No, it's whose fault is it if it's bad?
Well, I mean, I think for one, it's everybody. Because
I blame you, Neil Miller.
Because when you have, you know, your director really is in a very technical sense, the director is the one with a lot of the creative vision, but the producer is the one making a lot of the budgetary decisions. They're making a lot of casting decisions. They're making a lot of, you know, the producer is, you know, you have to think of it like general manager and the manager of a baseball team.
Yeah.
You know, the general manager is the guy who hires everybody, and the manager is the guy who has to make those people work together. And if both of them don't do their job, then it's a problem. However, there are different styles, I guess, of producers. You know, you have people like Lorenzo de Bonaventura, who did G.I. Joe, Transformers, things like that. You know, but he works with a lot of strong directors. You know, like he works with Michael Bay. Michael Bay's movies are Michael Bay's movies, you know?
Yeah.
Like, there's nobody telling Michael Bay what to do on the set. And then it's interesting that it comes up this week with...
Well, okay. Since you went there with Michael Bay, I think that Michael Bay, he is concerned about certain things on set, and he could care less about other things. And that's where the producers do shit.
Well, yeah, but it's interesting.
That's why he works so well with Jerry Bruckheimer.
I had talked to Lorenzo de Bonaventura. Well, and I think it's just Bruckheimer and Bay worked together perfectly.
Yeah.
But I had talked to de Bonaventura about the difference between working with certain directors and Michael Bay, and he said, he's like, Michael Bay is the general of his movies. You know, he's, you know, you can barely keep up with him as a producer, so you just kind of got to let him go.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting, though, is you can, and we'll talk, actually, this is leading into a DVD segment. If you go back and you listen to the commentary on Armageddon on the Criterion Collection, which is not available on Blu-ray, it's interesting to hear the angst that Michael Bay has over dealing with the studio, because when Armageddon is the one that really put him on the map. I mean,
right.
Yeah, The Rock was big and Bad Boys was big, but Armageddon was his first massively huge, huge movie.
Yeah.
But he was still under the yoke of the studio, and he did not like that. But I think it turned into one of his better movies, probably one of his best movies, because Michael Bay doesn't care about story. He doesn't care about story. He doesn't care about characters. He cares about action and it looking cool and things looking like a beer commercial, and that's awesome. But that's why when he is the general, he just lets that other stuff fall apart. Whereas Armageddon, he had the studio saying, no, we need to have this love story because Titanic did so well.
Right, right. Well, and I think with Michael Bay, it's just he needs a good producer to keep the buffer.
Yeah.
You know, he needs Bruckheimer. He needs de Bonaventura. He needs somebody who can be in between him and the studio, because, yeah, he and studios don't get along. But then I think it's interesting it comes up this week because we have Nightmare on Elm Street, and the two guys who run Platinum Dunes, it's Michael Bay's company, but Andrew Form and Brad Fuller are the producers. And these are the kind of guys who, they are kind of the director of all these movies. You know, and it's unfortunate to say, but from everything I've heard from people who have visited their sets and talked to the directors of their movies, you know, you have Friday the 13th, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and now Nightmare, they really do direct these movies from the producer's chair. So the quality, and that's why I think there's a consistency to them. You know, it's a very consistent level of quality, be it good or bad or however you see it.
Well, but I'll tell you, Bruckheimer does that too. You watch Kangaroo Jack. Kangaroo Jack, as much of a departure as that is from Bruckheimer, it still looks like a Bruckheimer movie. Kangaroo freaking Jack, you know.
Yeah, so it's, you know, you have certain producers that are really strong, that have really strong creative visions, and then you have producers who really let their directors kind of go, and I think it really depends. But ultimately, it's the combination of the two. There's never any one person to blame when a movie goes wrong.
I don't think you can skirt the blame. I think the blame goes around. Like, and let's bring another example of this cop out. I think a lot of people were giving Kevin Smith a pass on this movie because they were like, "Oh, well, he didn't write it, and he's called himself a hired gun."
Yeah.
But you know what? You're in charge of the movie, and there's stuff that I watched in that movie, and I'm like, he could have handled that better. And I think where you really have a problem is where they don't know how to work together, and you have a director, even like take like Spider-Man 3, how Sam Raimi didn't want to do Venom, and there was all this angst about that,
right.
And he sort of was like, fine, I'll just make a crappy version of Venom, and you end up with something like that, and then you do get certain things where people, you have to learn how to handle your producers. Mel Brooks, when he did Blazing Saddles, for example, the producers came and insisted that he take out the farting cowboy scene.
Yeah.
And he literally says he took out a piece of paper, started making notes. I'll take out all the word uses of the N-word. He said, okay, I'll take. They gave him this list. He did none of it. And then it became a massive hit, and the producers were totally happy with it.
Well, of course. The money people. Well, and you have a third element at work there in, in studio interference. Because I think when you make a studio film, you have the director, then you have the producer, then you have the studio.
And you also have the star. Depending on the movie, you have a star that's causing a lot of problems. Jim Carrey's like that. Jim Carrey gets his hands in there. And if you ever see Superman 4, Quest for Peace, you know, rest in peace, Christopher Reeve, you know, God bless him. But he meddled with that movie, and that's why it was such a mess.
Yeah, well, you know, and it's the same thing with, a lot of people have read about Ed Norton and the Incredible Hulk, where the star wants to come in and they want to have a little bit of creative control and things like that. They have their own ideas and that can get a little bit messy if someone's not in control. You know, and yeah. I think that's a testament to directors and producers like Michael Bay, Jerry Bruckheimer, who are very in control of their movie. You know, you're never going to have a star getting in the way of Michael Bay's movie.
No.
You know, you're never going to have a star. You know, Jake Gyllenhaal would not get in the way of Prince of Persia if that turns out to be not a good movie, you know? Like, it'll be you know, Jerry Bruckheimer is the kind of guy who has full control over his movie. So I think it really does. It depends, and it's usually a team effort when a movie goes bad. No one sets out to make a terrible movie, but when it goes wrong, there's more than one person at fault.
There's a lot of blame to be handed out.
Yeah, if it was just one person, they would have got fired. So
exactly. All right, we're way behind. Let's quickly rip through the Fat Guy 5.
And oh, yes, this is a fun Fat Guy 5, too. This is a great one. The 5 most terrifying ways to die in a Platinum Dunes movie, because we've been talking about nothing but Platinum Dunes and all of their various remakes. And
yes.
We'll start with the new Nightmare on Elm Street. I'm not going to say which character it is, but there is a character who gets hit from behind by Freddy, and Freddy's hand explodes through his chest, which is something that did not happen in the first movie, in the original.
No, it did not.
And it's probably one of the coolest Freddy moments I've seen.
That's a bad way to die. Also, staying with the Nightmare on Elm Street, this one or the original, being burned alive, whether or not you've molested or killed children, this is
an ugly way to go. Doesn't matter. Yeah. And the next one is in Friday the 13th, when the girl was hung upside down in the sleeping bag. Jason's most creative kill for a man with barely a brain.
Well, he's got a big brain. It's hanging out of his head.
He has a pretty creative way of killing this girl. Puts her in a sleeping bag, hangs her upside down, and burns her alive. And I think what gets it at the end is when her burnt body just falls out.
Yes. And this is the girl who totally was naked in there, and then in the movie Bitch Slap, she was not naked, which made no sense. I just thought I'd throw that in there. I'm going to do this next one. In The Hitcher, the guy who gets ripped in half by the trucks, the Jennifer Jason Leigh character from the original movie, torn in half.
Drawn and quartered.
That's not a good way to die.
Definitely not. And the final one, and I love that this is the final one because I almost puked in the theater when I saw this, is the guy who gets put on the meat hook in Texas Chainsaw Massacre. It's not even a way to die. He's still alive at that point. And I don't think he dies until much later. But he gets put on the meat hook, and his leg is chopped off, and
Leatherface.
Yeah, Leatherface takes a bag of salt and puts it on the stub of his leg. to put salt in his wound while he's on a meat hook. It is the most disgusting thing I've ever seen in a film.
Yes.
And it really, it disturbs me to this day.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Even worse than the bathtubs, the hot tub scene in About Schmidt.
Indeed.
Anyway. And a little bit of trivia, in the original Texas Chainsaw, the meat hook scene, never showed the meat hook going in.
Interesting.
It's still very, have you seen the original? Very disturbing. Mm-hmm. Very disturbing. Hmm. So, anyways,
all right,
we got to go to a break.
Yeah, when we come back, we're going to wrap you up. And we're wrapping up here in Fat Guys at the Movies. I think we've talked Nightmare on Elm Street to death.
I think we have. I think we've killed it in its dream.
Yeah, so, you know, fascinatingly enough, we're going to move on to something else.
Yes.
And that is the world-famous DVD Roundup. We'll start with me. I've got three titles this week, all of them recommended on Blu-ray because they're all pretty... They're all very good-looking films. The first is Terry Gilliam's The Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus, which is pretty fantastic. And I enjoyed it. It's Heath Ledger's last movie, but that's not what's interesting about it. It's Terry Gilliam, and it kind of has a lot of that very early Terry Gilliam animation style, but in a much more grand way. And I really enjoyed it.
It was okay. I wasn't a big fan of the movie. I thought it was interesting what he was trying to do, but I just think it was misfocused.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just me. Not Fair to take enough. That away from you.
District 13 Ultimatum.
Is that about aliens in South Africa?
No, which is the sequel to the French film District B-13. It is the parkour movie, remember?
Parkour!
It is awesome. Awesome film. And it very much follows the same formula as the first movie, but it's still kind of awesome because there's a lot of... A lot of rear ends get kicked, let's say.
Okay.
A lot of awesome martial arts stuff. And then 5 Minutes of Heaven, which is a really, really interesting drama, stars Liam Neeson as a man who, he was former IRA as a teenager, IRA gangster, gang member.
Was he an original gangster?
And he killed this guy's older brother. And as a kid, this guy witnesses it, and it's all about the day that they meet. And they're going to be on this TV show, and they're going to essentially meet for the first time since this guy witnessed Liam Neeson's character kill his brother.
Is it a real TV, or is it like Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
No, well, I mean, it's just like they're filming it, you know? Like they know what they're going into, and it's all about kind of the emotions that would come up around that. And a really, really interesting, you know, character drama. So I enjoyed it. I would recommend at least renting it. It's called 5 Minutes of Heaven.
Okay.
So, what do you got?
For me, I got to throw out It's Complicated, just because it's there. I mean,
your life is complicated.
It was okay. It's not Nancy Meyers' best, but that's because I'm not in my 60s and I don't particularly want to see Meryl Streep and Alec Baldwin running around naked. But
why not?
It's cute. It's a cute enough movie. I mean, it's date night fodder, and it's something that I don't know if you want to watch it with like your mom. Even though your mom will probably love it. I'm not your mom, but your mom and anybody's mom.
Somebody's mom.
Somebody's mom is going to like it.
Yo mama.
And then there's a whole
the proverbial
bunch of
yo
them.
Mama.
There's a whole bunch of them out on Blu-ray. There are new movies to Blu-ray. Or three of them I'm pointing out are from Universal. What Universal's doing is doing this flip disc thing. Where one side's DVD, one side's Blu-ray. They're releasing The Jackal, which is okay, you know, and Traffic, which is fantastic. I highly recommend that. And Out of Africa, which is another award film. So those are out there. Dune is out on Blu-ray. Touchstone is releasing Armageddon and Tombstone out on Blu-ray as well. And part of it is, maybe I'm a little biased because I recently upgraded my television to a really, really nice, big, huge, high-def TV.
Nice.
Yeah, so the Tombstone looks really good on that, as does Armageddon.
Armageddon looks great on Blu-ray.
It's great on
Blu-ray. I was disappointed because the Criterion Edition DVD is such a fantastic DVD.
It is a great DVD.
And the Blu-ray doesn't have any of those special features on it.
But that's because it's Criterion. I think there's a whole rights issue thing. And...
Yeah, either way. Anymore.
Tombstone's not loaded with DVD. I mean, I don't have the Tombstone DVD, but Tombstone isn't loaded with special features, but they're there. There's some of them there. But when I thought, when I got Tombstone, I'm like, this will be good. It looks brilliant on Blu-ray because it's one of the best Westerns of recent years. And by recent, like to last 20 years. Mm-hmm. It's just the cinematography is beautiful in this movie. So that's definitely worth checking out. Mm-hmm. So, and then the stinker is Transylvania. Mm-hmm. I didn't see it, but nobody did. So it has to be the it holds the record for the lowest weekend gross of any movie that was released in 1,000 theaters or more.
All right, nice.
Something like 200 and some thousand. It literally made $250 or less per theater.
That's quality.
Yeah. It like the only one that did worse that I saw Delgo, and that like made 150.
Oh yeah, well that was a mess.
I think it was 126 per theater. So yeah.
Anyway, moving on. Time to wrap up our reviews. We had Furry Vengeance, which we both saw, and I think we agree that it sucks.
Yum yum.
And
if
then
you
we
see
had
the
Nightmare
movie, you'll know what I mean.
Nightmare on Elm Street, which we agreed that it kind of rocks.
Yeah. I think right. I was more kinda than rocks, and you were more rocks than kinda. If that
sure.
makes any sense.
Yeah, I think I liked it better.
Yeah.
Anyway, next week, the big movie coming out is Iron Man 2.
This little
I've already seen
film.
It. I'll give you a preview. It's kind of awesome.
Kind of awesome.
And Babies, which I think I've decided during the course of recording this show that I'm not going
to
see.
Yeah, so, I think it sounded like you're like, yeah, I'm not going to that one. That's way too far away.
Yeah, so we'll get Kevin's take on Babies. In the meantime, you can get us over at fatguysatthemovies.com. You can get us on iTunes. Make sure you go over to iTunes and give us some reviews. We like to read those reviews, and we'll read them on the air if you give them to us. So, anyway, have fun with a nightmare this weekend. Just go scare the crap out of yourselves.
That's right.
It'll be great.
Wear your Depends.